Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Most Americans are familiar with the hard truth that poverty remains a huge and in many places growing problem in our country. What many of us are less familiar with, however, is the concept of concentrated poverty, the situation in which the poor are increasingly concentrated into specific neighborhoods. A new report from policy analyst Brian Kennedy of the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center entitled Going Backwards, A Growth in Concentrated Poverty Signals Increasing Levels of Economic and Racial Segregation, shines a light on this vexing problem. Kennedy joined me in studio recently to discuss his findings and some of the things policymakers should do to address the issue. Well, Brian Kennedy, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You've written a new report at the Budget and Tax Center, which paints a pretty sobering picture about some of the reality of poverty and economics in North Carolina. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we often talk about poverty in general and talk about how poverty affects individual households. But there's a measure, a specific measure called concentrated poverty that we wanted to focus on. So concentrated poverty is considered neighborhoods are census tracts where 40% or more of the households are experiencing poverty. The reason why that measure is different and is important is that with any typical case, we understand kind of what are the impacts of poverty on a household. So what are the impacts on children? What are the impacts on parents who are trying to work? But when we have neighborhoods where there are concentrated poverty, we start to see a double burden. So we have a tax base that may not be able to support local funding of schools. We have oftentimes a lack of public resources and public investment. And so when we see concentrated poverty neighborhoods, we start to realize that there's not only having an impact on those individual households, but also on all the households that are within that neighborhood, whether they're experiencing poverty themselves or not.
So it's bad enough to live in poverty, but then when you walk out the door, you're in a neighborhood that doesn't even have the basic infrastructure to support, you know, sort of a normal life. You're just behind the eight ball twice.
Right, exactly. And anybody will say we want people to be able to live where they want to live, whether it's an important neighborhood because they've had family who have lived there for a long time, whether or not there are specific aspects about that community that they want to live in. We want people to be able to choose where they want to live. But we also want people to be able to have access to public resources that they should be able to have. And we want to make sure that communities are able to support themselves, that they're able to thrive and be healthy. And unfortunately, over the past couple of decades, we've actually seen a massive increase in the number of concentrated poverty neighborhoods. Not only have we seen an increase in poverty in general, right, but even more so, we've seen a concentration of where people who are experiencing poverty are living.
And this isn't happening necessarily by accident either. I mean, there's a good argument to be made that some of the policy choices that we make are responsible for some of this concentration of poverty.
I mean, this nation has a long history of poor choices regarding housing policy. And some of those are incidental and bad choices, and some of them have been intentional. So in the earlier part of the 20th century, we saw a lot of discriminatory housing policy. So whether it was
official segregation,
exactly,
in government policy.
Right. So we saw redlining sponsored by the federal government. We also saw discrimination from realtor organizations, you know, where the federal government kind of turned a blind eye to that.
Right.
And so as a result, we saw a lot of neighborhoods become racially segregated over time because of poorly planned housing, public housing projects and things such as that. We've seen not only just the racial segregation, but a larger economic segregation, a large part of that being this thing called spatial mismatch, where new jobs are not being created close to where people actually live. They're being created in suburbs. And so without, you know, good investments in public transportation, people aren't able to access where new jobs are being created.
Well, if you think about it, especially if you live in a city, even a reasonably metropolitan city like Raleigh, you can easily live in a neighborhood where if you don't have a working good automobile handy and the means to pay for it and to fuel it, then you've got to take like three buses to get somewhere to get to, which is sort of, you know, how realistic is that? You're going to get up at 5:30 in the morning and take 2.5 hours of buses to go 15 miles. I mean, it's just not a practical situation for people, even for people who want to work hard, who want to fight their way out of poverty, as we say.
Right. Absolutely. We're not giving people the tools. We're not giving communities the tools that they need. One thing that's interesting that we found in doing this report is that we've seen an increase in concentrated poverty, not just in, you know, typical urban counties as we would anticipate. We've seen a growth across the spectrum. So just to give you a couple of numbers, in 2000, we had 37 concentrated poverty neighborhoods in the entire state. As of 2016, we had 109 concentrated poverty neighborhoods. None of those neighborhoods were in what we considered rural counties. But we've seen a large growth in those occurring in large counties or in rural counties. And again, to your point, we might anticipate seeing concentrated poverty in a place like Charlotte. But when we start seeing places in Union County, or in rural places in Guilford County, those are places without infrastructure to provide transportation to folk. These are places where people aren't going to be able to take a bus to the grocery store. They need public resources. And so it's becoming an increasing problem. The other thing I'll note, there's always been a difference between who's experiencing concentrated poverty broken down by race. But over the past 20 years, we've seen almost a 900% increase in Latinx families who are living in concentrated poverty neighborhoods. What we find now is that people of color, families of color, regardless of their income, so regardless of whether they're experiencing poverty or not, are more likely than white North Carolinians to live in those neighborhoods. So the reality is that no matter whether or not you have enough income to keep you above poverty, no matter whether or not you're doing the things that we've asked you to do, whether you're getting your education, you're doing all these things, people of color are more likely to live in these neighborhoods that are underinvested, that don't have the resources that they need in order to thrive.
And you've got actually county by county data, I believe, in this report, right? If folks want to get online and check
it out. Yeah, so you should absolutely check and see where your county lies and how many high poverty neighborhoods there are in your county. And then we also show a comparison between 2000 and 2016, so you can see if your county has grown, if it's done better, and kind of where that growth is happening in the state.
We'll say at the end how to for folks to check out the report. But I do want to focus on, you know, some of the things maybe that we can do about this. I mean, we're not completely at the mercy of the winds of fortune here. There's things that public structures and government can do about it. There are possibilities for intentional public solutions to address these problems. What are some of the things that you identify that we ought to be doing?
Well, one of the first things is that we need to make sure that people who work are able to make a living. Part of that is increasing the minimum wage. North Carolina, as of 2014, had the second highest rate of the working poor in the entire nation. So one of the first solutions is making sure that people actually have a living wage. Another thing that we can do is to invest in infrastructures in our communities that allow people to get to where they need to go, that we're investing in our schools, that we're investing in these critical public structures that help to alleviate some of the double burden that people are experiencing. And the last thing I'll say is that we have to recognize the policies that created these issues. We have to move away from the narrative that people are living in these neighborhoods as a result of their own failings or a result of their own decisions. And we have to recognize that this is a creation of public policy and that we're going to have to pass policies, racially conscious policies, in order to actually alleviate these issues.
Well, we've got a lot, our work cut out for us. It's critically important that people read these kinds of reports, that policymakers absorb them. We sure hope they will. Let's tell people how they can find it. If they go to ncjustice.org, which is the parent organization of the Budget and Tax Center, right? The North Carolina Justice Center, they can search on the Budget and Tax Center icon and find
absolutely.
This.
So if you check out the website, www.ncjustice.org, you can click on the NC Budget and Tax Center, and the report should be right up there.
And again, it's called Growing Backwards, A Growth in Concentrated Poverty Signals Increasing Levels of Economic and Racial Segregation. It's about North Carolina and the reality that we face today, and we're really glad you did it. Wish it were better news, but it's important for people to know the truth, so thanks for telling it.
Thanks.
All right, we'll do this again soon. Thanks,
Brian.
Always
a pleasure.
Up next, one of the state's top political scientists discusses the Trump presidency and the rise in women candidates it has spurred. Stay with us.